Good morning. Morning. Welcome on this beautiful spring morning. Greetings. I bring greetings back from Ferry Beach, too, where there are 92 of us up there for the weekend. I was up there with them yesterday. For those of you who may be here for the first time or back after a while, I want you to know that we're so glad you're here with us. Also, if anyone needs childcare, there is childcare and a religious education program this morning, even though there's this army of our kids running around the beach up in Maine. But for those who are here, we still have care and programming for you. And we also hope that you will join us after the service for some refreshments in the fellowship hall and some good conversation. Words of Clinton Lee Scott. From the east comes the sun, bringing a new and unspoiled day. It's already circled the earth and looked upon distant lands and faraway people. It's passed over mountain ranges and the waters of seven seas. It's shone upon laborers in the field, into the windows of homes and shops and factories. It's beheld proud cities with gleaming towers and also the hovels of the poor. It has been witness to both good and evil, the works of honest men and women and the conspiracy of knaves. It has seen marching armies, bomb-blasting villages, the destruction that wasteth at noonday. Now, unsullied from its tireless journey, it comes to us, messenger of the morning, harbinger of a new day. As Rich and Ann Feldman light our chalice, I invite you to join in the words of chalice lighting that seem particularly appropriate for today. Today, impetuous green thrusts upward toward the light. All nature things, all things reach towards the light. For light is life, and warmth and rain are life. Amen. And now I invite you to be attentive to, I think, probably a humorous message for all ages.
Indeed. And Alana's going to join me on this, and I'll give you the backstory. So one of the things that Tom is talking about today is how laughter is one of the best medicines. And a few years ago, when Alana, I think, was 10, there was a visiting minister who wanted to do a service on humor. And this book, called the Tushy Book, was one of Alana's favorite books when she was little. And the reason being is because every time we said the word tushy, she'd go, Mom, Mama, don't say tushy. So then we saw this book at Building 19, and we had to get it. And we read it many times. And then Alana shared this book and read it with me. And it's one of my favorite memories ever of us sharing something at church together, because we shared it together at 10. And when I asked her if she would reprise her role, she accepted. So even though she's on crutches, she's up here, and we're going to read the Tushy Book together. And it's just for a good laugh. And this is the Tushy Book by Fran Manushkin. Life is comfy, you will find, when you have your own behind.
Sitting down would not be cushy if you didn't have your tushy. When you are born, your tushy's there, ready to go anywhere.
After crawling, you can nap.
Your tushy fits on every lap. Tushies, tushies, riding sleds, somersaulting over heads. Tushy small or tushy's plump, pillow you on every bump. Every tushy's in the back, every tushy has a crack. Where would you put your underwear if your tushy wasn't there?
Tushy's so much fun to say. Say it 10 times every day. Tushy, 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 tushy.
Tushy, 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 tushy.
When you sleep, your tushy's lying.
When you leap, your tushy's flying.
Tushy's dancing.
Skating, spinning.
Tushy's racing, tushy's winning. Every dog and every kitty needs a tush for sitting pretty.
Kings and queens have tushies too. You can't see them, but they do.
Grown-up tushies, firm or droopy. Baby tushies, cute but poopy. Tushies dressed and tushies bare. Tushies, tushies everywhere. So be happy, jump and cheer. You will always have your rear. Stand up tall and be proud to say,
I use my tushy every day.
And I'll leave this in coffee hour because it's worth looking at the pictures.
Well, as I often do at this part of the service, I like to share with you a little story. There is an elderly couple, and they walk in together to McDonald's. They go up to the counter, and they order one hamburger, one order of French fries, and one Coke. And they go and sit down at the table in a rather full McDonald's, and folks are looking at them, younger folks, and the husband dutifully cuts the hamburger exactly in half and puts one half in front of his wife and one half in front of him. And then he counts out the French fries, divides them equally and puts one half in front of her and one half in front of him. And they're sharing the Coke, taking a sip, each one, then the other. And the people in the McDonald's are saying, oh, look at this poor elderly couple. They can't afford two meals. So someone walks over to them and says, I would be honored to buy you another meal. And they said, oh, no, we share everything. We always share everything. They said, no, really, it's fine. So they go back, and the husband starts eating his hamburger and eating his fries, and the wife sits there, and people are still watching, and pretty soon the husband is just about finished the fries, and the guy who came up goes over again and said, well, you know, I would like to buy you a meal, but I'm really curious. He's eating, but you haven't eaten any of your food. What are you waiting for? And she smiled and said, the teeth. And then he removed his dentures. Well, here we offer you an opportunity each week to share a portion of what you have with others, but we won't ask you to share your teeth. But we will still ask you to be generous so that we can carry on the good work of this church. And this month, not just to this church, but the worthy charity which we split our offering with is the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, our own social justice work that we do with 50 other churches in the inner city of Boston. They will receive one half of the offering for this month. The morning offering will be gratefully accepted. This morning's reading was written, it says, collectively by the staff of the Mayo Clinic. It's called Stress Relief from Laughter. It's no joke. Whether you're guffawing at a sitcom on TV or quietly giggling at a newspaper cartoon, laughter does you good. Laughter is a great form of stress relief, and that's no joke. A good sense of humor can't cure all ailments, but data is mounting about the positive things laughter can do. A good laugh has great short-term effects. When you start to laugh, it doesn't just lighten your load mentally, it actually induces physical changes in your body. Laughter can stimulate many organs. Laughter enhances your intake of oxygen-rich air, stimulates your heart, lungs, and muscles, and increases the endorphins that are released by your brain. It can activate and relieve your stress response. A rollicking laugh fires up and then cools down your stress response, and it can increase your heart rate and blood pressure. The result? A good, relaxed feeling. It can soothe tension. Laughter can also stimulate circulation and aid muscle relaxation, both of which can help reduce some of the physical symptoms of stress. Laughter isn't just a quick pick-me-up, though. It's good for you over the long term. Laughter may improve your immune system. Negative thoughts manifest in chemical reactions that can affect your body by bringing more stress into your system and decreasing your immunity. In contrast, positive thoughts can actually release neuropeptides that help fight stress and potentially more serious illnesses. Laughter can relieve pain. Laughter may ease pain by causing the blood to produce its own natural painkillers. Laughter can increase personal satisfaction. Laughter can also make it easier to cope with difficult situations. It also helps you connect with other people. Laughter can improve your mood. Many people experience depression, sometimes due to chronic illness. Laughter can help lessen your depression and anxiety and may make you feel happier. Go ahead. Give it a try. Turn the corners of your mouth up into a smile and then give a laugh, even if it feels a little forced. Once you've had your chuckle, take stock of how you're feeling. Are your muscles a little less tense? Do you feel more relaxed or buoyant? That's the natural wonder of laughing at work. Well, as the people from the Mayo Clinic have told us, laughter is good for your body, good for your physical and emotional health. We can even say it's good for your spiritual health. You know, in several religious traditions, laughter is actually recognized as a spiritual practice. In some Zen monasteries, they begin and end the day with 15 minutes of laughter. The spiritual teacher Osho recommended long periods of laughter before meditating. And even in Catholic theology, it's said that angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. Children, if you notice, laugh a lot. Studies show they laugh 100 to 200 times a day. And adults, only a couple of times, and maybe not even once. We've lost something valuable in our growing up, and that is not laughing enough. Laughing may not seem like it has much to do with serious religion, but here's a question. Have you ever noticed how much the Dalai Lama laughs? Laughter is just good for the soul. Laughter can clear our mind, it can lift our spirits, or it can begin a healing process. You know, even when we are grieving, remembering a funny story about a departed loved one can lessen our pain. I believe humor makes it easier to talk about some things. Many of you will remember when I first started here at Minister, almost every week, as I did today, I told a joke or a funny story as part of the ask at the offertory. And there was a reason for that. You see, when I first got here, a lot of folks were really uptight about talking about money, especially by the minister and especially from the pulpit. So it was a way to loosen things up a bit. Some of you even got into it and started sending me humorous stories to use in worship. Right, Jim? And many of them did make their way into the worship, but I had to screen some of them out and clean up others a bit to make them appropriate for general consumption. Well, like those angels, we too need to take ourselves a bit more lightly. And I mean that as individuals, and I also mean it as a religious institution. You know, there are probably more jokes involving religion than any other topic. And that's fine, so long as they're not hurtful or degrading to any group. Most often, people make jokes about their own tradition, and there's reason for that. It's because we need to see the lighter side of who we are, even amid the most serious of topics. Think about when religions don't allow any humor, where that goes. We see that in our world right now. There must be how many people does it take to change a light bulb joke about every religion in the world that I could think of anyway? You know, for Presbyterians, it is, why should we change a light bulb, as God has predetermined which bulb should shine and which should not? Or for the Episcopalians, it says, takes 10, one to call the electrician and 9 to reminisce about how much better they like the old bulb than the new bulb. And did you know how many light bulbs it takes? How many Unitarians it takes to change a light bulb? Let me tell you, if you go online, you will find umpteen different answers for this, but I thought this one was pretty good. The answer. We choose not to make a statement either in favor of or against the need for a light bulb. However, if on your own journey you have found that light bulbs work for you, That's fine. You're invited to form a committee to write a poem or compose modern dance about your light bulb for next Sunday's service, during which we will explore a number of light bulb traditions, including incandescence, fluorescence, three-way, long life, and tinted, all of which are equally valid paths to luminescence. Many jokes actually involve contrasting one religion to another. And gosh, how many versions of the priest minister in the rowboat or in the coffee shop joke are there? And another similar joke formula is the contrasting the believer and the non-believer, like this one I recently heard. There was a very religious woman that had to do a lot of traveling for her business, and she was rather uneasy about flying. It made her nervous. So she would always take her Bible along and read as it helped her to relax on the long flights. One time she was sitting next to a man who, when he saw her pull out her Bible, gave a little chuckle and a smirk and went back to what he was doing. And she kept reading, and after a while, he turned to her and asked and said, "You don't really believe all that stuff in there, do you?" And the lady replied, "Of course I do. It's the Bible." And he said, "Well, what about that guy that gets swallowed by the whale?" She replied, "Oh, you mean Jonah? Yes, I believe that. It's in the Bible." And he asked, "Well, how do you suppose he survived all that time inside a whale?" And the lady said, "Well, I don't really know. I guess when I get to heaven, I will ask him." And sarcastically, the guy said, "Well, what if he isn't in heaven?" And she replied, "Then I guess you'll have to ask him." I think it's okay to poke a little fun at ourselves and the beliefs of others as well. The truth is, we need not only feel free to poke a little fun at religion, but also to bring a little humor right here into worship. You know, many times people who come to this church for the first time have commented to me that they've never been in a church before where people laugh during the service and how much they've liked that. And there's good reason why people do. In the midst of all the very serious and important things we discuss, even in the difficult ministry we do here to the sick and the grieving, lots of funny things happen. So this morning's sermon, I want to share some of those funny things that happen in the church. And before I get going on that, perhaps it's maybe good to recall the advice of the famous cigar-smoking George Burns, who said about sermons, "The best ones have really good beginnings and a great ending and the shortest distance possible between the two." Well, in today's sermon, it's about fun, so I hope you'll cut me a little slack on that one. I want to talk to you about the funny things that have happened in church and in my role as a minister. And I want to start by saying that I'm no novice to church humor. Before I became a minister, I witnessed lots of funny things happening in church. As far back as I can remember, I was a precocious kid, and on one of my early visits to church with my very proper grandmother, I yelled out, "How come that guy gets to go to church in his bathrobe?" And when I was in high school and college, I had a job. Actually, it was a good job for a high school kid. I thought I was rich. I made a few dollars playing the organ at a large inner-city Catholic church. And believe me, lots of funny things happened there. Now, you might know that for Catholics, the Easter Vigil service is the most important service liturgically of the year. It's one with a lot of ceremony and logistics. Everything has to be just right. And aren't those the situations where something always goes wrong? One year, the church I was working, the ladies were setting up for the service. The church had these, I don't know if you've ever seen them, spring-loaded candles, the type that the actual candle goes in a tube, and the spring pushes it up so the candle always stays or looks to be full length, you know? Well, the ladies reasoned that this is a long service, and they surely did not want any of the candles to run out before the end. So they decided they better replace them all. Well, There's sort of a tricky top mechanism on each of the candles that you have to turn a certain way and to get them open and lock them back and to keep the candle down into the against the spring in the tube. Well, the ladies replaced all the candles. And at the high point in the service, the symbolic moment when the resurrection is proclaimed, the organ and the choir blast out the Gloria and the candles are lit. Well, with all the vibrations and the attempt to light the candles, one by one, they begin to blast off like rockets into the air, crisscrossing the sanctuary, depending on what side they were on, with the clergy ducking and covering their heads because they had those big, you know, brass things on the top of them. And the people didn't know whether to cheer or gasp, as they weren't sure if this was an accident or someone's idea of a new way to proclaim the resurrection. Now, some of you may remember, particularly if you have any Catholic background in you, or you may know anyway, the old Catholic tradition was that all the statues in the church were covered until, during Lent, were covered until the Gloria was proclaimed in the Easter Vigil, and then the covers were all ripped down. Well, in another church where I was working in the choir, I watched an altar boy pick up this pole to remove the covering that was on a statue that was way up high on the altar. And he had a little trouble, but he finally hooked it. He hooked onto this old purple satin drapey, and he got it loose. But as he was bringing it down on the pole, it got away from him. And it landed in the lit altar candles and burst into flames. Well, not to be outdone, the other altar boy grabbed the fire extinguisher. And that kind of got away from him. So he sprayed foam all over everything. Candles, Easter lilies, and the highly polished marble floor, which now made it impossible for the elderly priest to move without falling. So he was clinging to the altar for dear life. And finally, a group from the congregation had to come up and rescue him and clean the entire area before the service could continue. And then probably the most sensational in my short tenure as organist in a Catholic church was the Christmas Eve midnight mass. Now, it's always interesting at a Christmas Eve inner city midnight mass. It attracts a lot of interesting people. And the church was packed. And the line for people to receive communion was very long. And at the very end of the line was this mentally challenged man who often showed up at things at this inner city church. And the priest extended his hand to put the communion bread in the man's hand. But you see, the man had been holding up his pants. So when he let go to take the bread, they fell to the floor, revealing that he was not wearing any underwear. Much to the shock of the congregation, there he stood naked from the waist down, waiting for the wine. The old priest quickly put down the chalice and then dropped to the floor in front of the man trying to pull up his pants. Now, the choir was to sing a big anthem at the end of the communion. The organist, which I was the assistant, was back to the congregation, so he couldn't see what was going on. So he played the introduction of the piece. The choir stood up on cue, and they looked down to see the priest kneeling in front of a man, naked from the waist down, at the head of a center aisle. And though the choir tried desperately to sing out the first notes of the piece, instead came out grunts and laughter bursts. Well, the funny things that happened at church were certainly not limited to my early days when I was working as an organist. In my ministry, lots of unexpected humorous things have happened. Some were not humorous at the time they happened, but in retrospect. Now, just before I became your minister, I was candidating for a position at several churches. And I would go to what's called a neutral pulpit. You'll be going through this process, so good to know about it. It's a church where I would lead worship and preach, so a committee from the churches that were looking for a minister could come and consider me and could evaluate me. And well, for one of the times, the neutral pulpit was in Bedford. Some of you know that church. And at the time, the minister was on sabbatical. and the lay leader that was supposed to be in charge seemed unable to really tell me anything about how the service worked there. And I asked him about several things, and then I asked him about, you know, joys and concerns. How do you handle them? And he said, oh, don't you worry at all. The lay ministers take care of all of that. So I said, fine. So the time came, I'm sitting down, and people are coming up to light candles and speak with the lay ministers there. And there's a rather unusual man in the line. So he lights a candle, and then instead of speaking from there, he walks a few pews down in the center aisle, falls on his knees, and proposes marriage to a woman seated there. She lets out a rather unpleasant gasp and sort of moves away and ducks down in the pew. The congregation freezes, and the lay ministers who are supposed to be doing everything all look at me. As I'm sure the committee that's evaluating me does. And I have no idea what's going on. I don't know if these two even know each other, or if he's the local sexual predator. She seems uncomfortable and overwhelmed, and he looks like a wide-eyed puppy dog, and no one is saying anything. You can just feel the tension in the room. And then I realize that I am walking to the pulpit with no idea what I'm going to say. So finally, what came out of my mouth was, do you folks do this every week? Well, there was a laugh, and it broke the tension. And by that time, the two of them were hugging in the center aisle and kissing. And I decided that was enough for joys and concerns, even though there were others there. So I announced the offertory, at which point the lovely couple continued to upstage my sort of audition as a minister by dancing in front of the pulpit for the offertory music. Well, my pre-candidating for this position was not as eventful. I was invited to be your candidate and to spend a week getting to know you. And the week went well. You invited me to be your minister, and I accepted, and my first service in this pulpit here in Stowe was 15 years ago, and I was a bit nervous. You see, many people had told me of what their expectations of worship was, and of course, each person pretty much contradicted the one before. Many of them told me, you should never do this, and the next one told me, you should always do that. One person told me how much they loved the interim minister's sermon, and another person right after them told me how much they hated the interim minister's sermons. And some spoke to me about the beloved minister emeritus who attended worship every Sunday. Okay, that was when one of many red flags went up. You see, minister emeritus don't usually attend every week, especially when a new minister is just starting out. But everyone assured me that Don Kafka would be a great supporter and would never do anything to interfere or upstage my ministry. Well, soon came that first Sunday in the pulpit, and the church was packed full. And you know, I knew I wanted to start everything right on the time. So as the hour came, I got out of this chair and I went up to this pulpit and started to give the opening words. And just as I opened my mouth, that automatic handicap door, which we used to use as the handicap door, flew open on the automatic thing, and trying to rush and get in before the service started, Don Kafka darted out of the door with his little roly walker. And as many of you remember, Don had a medical condition where he sort of moved in fits and starts sometimes. And especially when he was stressed, he could get to the point where his legs wouldn't move at all. Well, he got right in front of the pulpit, and his legs froze. He was stuck directly in front of me as I was trying to do the opening words. And then, if those of you who remember, Vera was not happy with this, so she ordered him to move and tried to pull him along. And at that point, the words of the committee, Reverend Kafka would never do anything to upstage you in the pulpit, came to me, and I kind of chuckled inside. Well, of course, the truth is, we became great friends. And he never was anything but supportive. and it was my honor to officiate at both he and his wife Vera's memorial service. But it was a little interesting beginning. Well, lots of humor in church comes from kids. When you ask that question at the Message for All Ages, you just never really know what you're going to say. When you do those child dedication services, you never quite know what they're going to do. I remember, Bob, we were just talking about this the other night, your grandson, Tom. It's our tradition to give out this little vote, which represents the stability of the church in your life and how we're always there for you. Their grandson completely crushed and destroyed the boat during the service. We would replace it. But my favorite story of my favorite children's service and my favorite story about it comes from the 4 p.m. Christmas Eve service, when those of you who've been there know we create our nativity scene by pulling out old costumes from a trunk. And the kids are wide-eyed and excited. Most times the story moves along smoothly with kids playing with the stuffed animals as I speak and all gathered up front. You remember that we have a camel and sheep and a donkey and a very floppy cow that cannot stand up on its own that we prop up. Well, one year, kids were all up front around me, and this little boy was intrigued by the floppy cow. He was pulling at my robe, wanting to say something. So I said, I finally put the mic down, thought it would be cute, and let him speak, figuring I could just, work it into the story, whatever he said. And in the sternest voice, he announced, "Your cow has mad cow disease." "That's not all. You need to shoot it." Not exactly what I was expecting. I think I replied, "The cow is fine and we're going to go on with the story." But I have to admit, I was a bit off my game for the rest of the service that year. One time I was doing a memorial service here for a person from town with a lot of Catholic roots. Much of the congregation I knew was going to be Catholic. I'd met with the family. So I made sure to create the service that I thought would make them feel comfortable. But I think something did make them feel uncomfortable after all. Now, if you look down at your feet, you'll see that most pews, there are footstools. You see them there? Well, when I came out to start the service, there they were, all kneeling on the footstools. And one later said to me, "Father, the kneelers in your church are very hard." In my ministry here, there are also lots of funny stories that have not taken place in worship. Often, especially if I haven't brought my lunch, I'll run down to Shaw's to grab something, or sometimes I stop there to get something on my way home. After several incidents, I have to say I begin rather leery about going to Shaw's and seeing who I might encounter there. One day, I was walking up and down the aisle, kind of rushing along, and I could see this woman was looking at me. And I sort of recognized her, but I was in a hurry, and I kept moving and didn't really come to me who she was. And soon I turned down another aisle, which was a very crowded aisle. And you know how it happens? Our shopping carts kind of came together, so we were looking right at each other. And she looked at me and she said, in a loud voice that everyone could hear, "How can you not recognize me? You married me." All heads turned. It was quiet. Finally, I collected my wits and said, "You mean I officiated at your wedding?" On another occasion, in Shaw's also, only maybe 6 months or so after that one, I was going up and down the rows again, and I kept seeing a different woman who kept staring at me. This time, I had no idea who she was. So I just kept about my business. And again, with a lot of people nearby, when I ran into her again, she blasted out, "Oh, now I know who you are. You're the minister at the church. You really look different with your clothes on. At that point, everyone was really staring at me. And I was trying to think what to say. Finally, it dawned. I didn't even understand what she meant at first, but finally it dawned on me what she was saying, and I said in a very loud voice to those all waiting a response now, "Oh, you mean I look different when I'm not wearing my clerical robe?" Well, I definitely didn't follow George Burns' advice. I can tell you this sermon was at least 400 words longer than usual, but I hope it went by quickly. Having a few laughs maybe makes it seem shorter. What I want you to know is there have been lots of fun and funny times here at church and in this ministry. And the humor has been an important part of my connecting with you and connecting with the greater community. This church is not a place where you have to check your sense of humor at the door. And a good laugh is good for the body and the soul.